This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
6:14 on this Friday morning, now with part one of the Morning Ag Show, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. Your grain futures yesterday off of the Board of Trade had corn ending on a strong note, gaining 3.25 to 5.25. Soybeans had gains of 17 to 20, and wheat had gains of 8 to 10 cents. First off, corn futures ended again on that strong note of 3.25 to 5.25 cents. March led Thursday's gains, closing at 4.32.5, its strongest close this month. The contract high for March was established on November 30th at 4.32.5. New crop December closed at 4.15. Support came from a variety of areas, including a strong export sales figure yesterday at over 75 million bushel, as well as another drop to the U.S. dollar, now at its lowest level in over 2 years. The dollar has lost a near 5% of its value over the last several weeks. Sharply higher soybeans and a reduction in the Argentina rain forecast for this weekend and next week all helped to support prices Thursday. Short covering was likely noted as well, with a solid close above the 21-day moving average. Wheat prices also finished with double-digit gains, adding to support for row crops. Soybean futures closed with sharp gains as new contract highs were scored in all contracts. January and March led yesterday's, with each closing 17.5 cents higher, March at 12.01.25 and May at 12.06.5. New crop November closed at 10.72.25. Strong demand for bean products coupled with dry, warm weather in Argentina and a port strike tied to inflationary conditions demeaning workers' wages helped give the complex the edge needed to break out of the upside. Conditions are still mostly favorable for crop development in most of Brazil, but Argentina may suffer as forecasters are suggesting less rain for the week ahead. Strong export sales were noted at 34 million bushels in terms supportive, and that was a private forecast for less yield in the January report. Lastly, a dock worker strike in Argentina may be suggesting a potential for more U.S. exports of soybeans. Argentina is the leading supplier of soybean meal and soybean oil to the world. And finally, your wheat highlights had March Chicago futures up by 10.25 at 6.08.75, May up 10, 6.09.75, March Kansas City up 8.5 at 5.70, May Kansas City up 8.25, 5.74. Wheat once again nearing the upper end of the current trading channel, but still quite a ways off from the March high of 6.37 and three quarters, or Kansas City's high of 5.88. Wheat was positive even on Thursday morning, but as soybeans took out the $12 resistance level and corn took out 4.30, that left wheat to follow suit and push higher. With Russia limited on export supply this week of 235,000 metric tons that was purchased from the Ukraine and Romania, that's the first time in weeks that Russia has excluded from that tender. U.S. exports were 540,700 metric tons, down 12% from last week, but up overall for the month. Turkey on Wednesday agreed to eliminate their import tariff on wheat from 20% to zero through the end of April. U.S. dollar had put in a contract low on Thursday of 89.73, which should be friendly for U.S. exports. The U.S. plains continues to receive much-needed moisture in the form of snow. However, the long-term outlook is set to return to very dry conditions from the effects of La Niña, still not expected to see any real potential relief until the end of January or February. January wheat options will expire next Thursday, which is Christmas Eve, and Christmas Eve markets close early at noon Central Time. So to recap your grain futures from yesterday, Thursday off the Board of Trade, corn futures ended with gains of 3.25 to 5.25. Soybean contracts gained 17.5 cents, and March wheat was up by 10 to 10.25. And we'll move on and take you to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for yesterday, Thursday's cash grain report.
This is Thursday's Board of Grain Price and Trends prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois cut grain prices were higher on Thursday afternoon. Soybeans on the Board of Trade finally broke through the $12 mark today. In northern West Illinois, cut grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 5 to 7 cents at 4.02 to 4.32. Soybeans were 17 to 18 cents higher at 11.51 to 11.97. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 2 to 5 cents at 4.15 to 4.36. Soybeans were 15 to 17 cents higher at 11.78 to 11.99. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were up 5 to 10 cents at 4.20 to 4.57. Soybeans were 17 to 20 cents higher at 11.81 to 12.27. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 18 cents higher at 12.11 to 12.21. Basis was steady at 10 over to 20 over the January. High pro soybean meal on a truck basis offered at $395.90 to $407.90 a ton, up $3.40 a ton. But basis unchanged at 200 to 10 over the January. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids were up 5 to 8 cents at 431 to 458. With basis steady to up 3 at 225 over the March. Illinois River barge loading elevators coated to producer corn bids up 5 to 8 cents, 436 to 443. With basis unchanged to up 3 at 3 over to 10 over the March. Soybeans ended 18 cents higher at 1211 to 1221. With basis steady at 10 over to 24 over the January. East St. Louis barge flowing to Money Placer. Producer corn bids 6 to 9 cents higher at 463 to 467. These elevators raise their soybean prices 17 to 19 cents. Quotations at 1229 to 1230. Soft wheat closed up 10 cents at 638 to 639. Milo ended the day 6 cents higher at 503 to 508. Contract bids producers for January delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 405 to 435. Soybeans at 11.51 to 11.98. In the central part of the state, corn for January delivery at 4.13 to 4.39. Soybeans at 11.78 to 12.03. In the southern part of the state, corn for January delivery at 4.22 to 4.60. Soybeans at 11.88 to 12.33. That concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on to your livestock futures from Thursday, cattle futures followed through buying on Thursday, and prices posted modest gains. Hog futures finished in missed trade Thursday with weakness seen in the front month contracts. On cattle, December gained 57 cents to 109.35, February 67 cents higher, 114.45. The cattle market is seeing buying optimism going into today's cattle on feed report, and a weakening U.S. dollar brings buying strength into the ag markets as well. The strength in the cattle market this week has been in the face of soft fundamentals, but at midday on Thursday, it seen some finishing and firming to those fundamentals. Cash trade has been slow to develop this week, but mostly early trade was at $105. Late in the afternoon Thursday, some 108 trading was reported in Texas. Steady money with last week. The market may be building up some hope that futures may be pulling the cash market higher. Remaining cash trade will be spotty going into the USDA report today. Wholesale box beef prices have been under strong selling pressure, but midday trade on Thursday brought some improvement. Choice carcasses gained $1.23 to $208.45, selects $1.67 higher, $193.76. Closing carcass values could be key for early trade on this morning. Carcass values should find some support, this $200 to $210 choice carcass range. Load counts have been moderate and improving at these lower levels. The technical picture in the live cattle market has vastly improved over the week. Deferred contracts have pushed to new highs, and front-month contracts are challenging key resistance levels. With the overall participation very low in the cattle futures market, technical strength should be a signal for improved money flow and additional participation. Open interest is a key measure on the cattle market, and last year, open interest in cattle markets were just over 380,000 contracts. The feeder cattle market also was stronger Thursday with modest to strong gains. Jan feeders were 12 cents higher, 140.97. March feeders 62 cents higher, 142.60. The strength in the live cattle market was the prospect of tight cattle numbers in the long term that are giving feeders their buying power despite the strength in the grain market. The most noticeable in the aug feeder cattle was $1.22 higher there, $150.25, crossing the psychological $150 barrier. Moving on to your hog futures finished much of Thursday in the red with weakness in front month contracts. February hogs 47 cents lower, 65.50. April hogs down 2 cents, 69.30. The slight strength in the hog market was the deferred contracts, which all posted slight gains. The weakness in the hog market came in despite of a strong week of export sale. With pork products at multi-week lows, importers stepped in and secured pork supply for the end of the year and into next year. For 2020, export sales were 39,900 metric tons, and for 2021, new export sales are at 44,300. Mexico and China were the largest buyers of U.S. pork last week. Export shipments followed suit at 42,000 metric tons. These were overall friendly numbers, but failed to truly move the market. The export market will be closely watching the buying habits of China going into next year. Their Lunar New Year holiday is in early February, and aggressive buying is likely for that event, but what will be their actions after with the prospects of their hog herd rebuilding? The weakness overall in the market is still tied to soft fundamentals. The overall cash market remains weak, and the lean hog index was a penny lower to 65.05. That could be going into 2021, and still holding a slight premium to the February hog contract. Slaughter is still heavy at 470,000 head, but may be trending lower, and that could be also a key going into next year. Carcass values were firm at midday, but gave up those gains going into the close, $1.64 lower, 73.22. The current load count was modest at 324 loads traded. Typically, the hog market is having a hard time pushing through overhead resistance, and that could add to selling pressure into the end of this year. So again, to recap your livestock futures from yesterday, live cattle had gains of 57 to 67, while feeder cattle had gains of 12 to 62, with August finishing $1.22 higher. Again, your hogs were lower by 2 to 47 cents. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Thursday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Thursday afternoon livestock report. Starting the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for 200-pound park carcass traded 94 cents lower, in a range of $46 to $54, with a weighted average carcass price of $52.07. In the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sow price were weak, with light demand for light to moderate offerings. U.S. 1 to 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded $24 to $27, 4 to 5 weighted $26 to $29, 5 to 6 weighted $30 to $33, and over 600 pounds $32 to $35. On the Illinois direct hog trade, prices of barrels and gilts, country buying points were weak, with light to moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging $31 to $36. Packer receipts for barrels and gilts have totaled $31,738. In the direct cattle trade, in the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, choice steers live bases trade at $104 to $108. And on a dress basis at 165 to 167. Choice heifers and live bases trade at 106 and on a dress basis at 165. From the National Daily Pork Plant Port, trading for retail and processing cuts was staged with 324 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was 73.22, which is $1.64 lower. From the National Box Beef Cutout Port, values for choice select beef carcass are trading higher. Choice carcass were $209.51, which is $2.29 higher, while select carcass were $193.70, which is $1.61 higher. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 116,000, compared to 120,000 last week, 122,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 475,000, compared to 493,000 last week, and 496,000 one year ago. That includes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by Taylor Tire and Auto of Litchfield, by Pros Drainage, and by Farm Credit Illinois. Part two of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you this morning by the CNB Bank and Trust, with 17 locations to serve you, and by Stein Seed. And once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thanks again, Randy. Now for Ag News on your Friday morning, this week before Christmas. Congressional lawmakers were hoping to get an 11th-hour virus relief package across the finish line as COVID infections and deaths soar, the economy loses steam, and Americans grow weary of waiting any longer for more help. Lawmakers were facing a midnight deadline last night when short-term government funding runs out to pass some $900 billion in virus relief as part of a long-term spending bill. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
After all these months, struggling Americans don't just need action. They need action fast.
Assistant Democratic Leader and Illinois Senator Dick Durbin helped craft a bipartisan virus package forming the basis of any final House-Senate deal.
Extending unemployment insurance benefits with $300 a week federal supplement, $300 billion for business loans for those that are struggling to survive, an additional $13 billion for the food stamp program, now known as SNAP, $13 billion for our farmers, $25 billion for emergency rental assistance to avoid evictions, $34 billion to hospitals, clinics, a portion of that set aside for rural hospitals, $16 billion for testing and tracing and the logistics of delivering the vaccine across America, $10 billion for broadband,
which is key for rural students, businesses, and telemedicine, plus renewed checks for individuals and more for both daycare and schools. All of that is needed and urgently, according to American Farm Bureau's Dale Moore.
Well, it's pretty clear that the pandemic is not slowing down. It appears to be accelerating, certainly in this country. And certainly need that support that comes out of assistance packages we've had earlier this year. And so getting this one done and hopefully getting 2020 wrapped up on a high note relative to the assistance that folks need is certainly important.
Unresolved and likely left for next year and a Biden administration is any further work on contentious liability protection for meatpackers and other businesses, as well as aid to cities and states. In ag news and trade news from across the pond, Senior British Minister Michael Gove says that Britain had hoped to reach a trade deal with the European Union by now, but the talks may now go on until after Christmas. We want to ensure that Parliament has a say and a chance to scrutinize any agreement reached, Gove tells a parliamentary committee, so a realistic deadline will likely be immediately in the days after Christmas. Reuters says any possible disruption at British ports after the UK ends the status quo transition period with the EU and introduces new customs rules will be short-lived. A previous warning from the government said that even with trade agreements, the 7,000 trucks heading for ports in southeastern England would be held in check. Gove tells the parliamentary committee that a worst-case scenario. I would expect that we would find that after an initial few days and weeks of potential disruption, that things will resolve themselves and find a new normal relatively early into the new year, Gove adds. The British minister added that if there isn't time for Parliament to have a say in any potential agreement, the UK will have to trade on World Trade Organization terms. Back in news here from the U.S., Senate Finance Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley and a bipartisan group of three other senators introduced a bill called the Charitable Conservation Easement Program Integrity Act. The goal of the legislation is to stop the abuse of conservation easements, save taxpayers billions of dollars, and promote conservation in the U.S. The Conservation Easement Program is an important tool for protecting and preserving our environment, Grassley said. Bad faith scammers have taken advantage of the program through abusive schemes at the expense of the American taxpayer. Grassley investigated the growing number of scams and says they won't stop without legislative action. I'm glad to join Democrat Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan and Ron Wyden of Oregon, along with fellow Republican Steve Daines of Montana, in introducing this bill that would stop these scams from undermining the good work of farmers, ranchers, and conservationists, Grassley adds. Despite increased enforcement from the Internal Revenue Service, recent IRS data shows the total amount of deductions claimed through these tax shelters increased from $6.8 billion in 2017 to $9.2 billion in 2018. The bill preserves an important charitable deduction for people who have true charity and conservation in mind, including for farm families and ranch families. Tyson Foods fired 7 top managers at the largest pork processing plant after an investigation confirmed allegations that they bet on how many workers would test positive for COVID. The investigation was led by former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder and revealed details that an ABC News article called troubling allegations. An outbreak at the Tyson plant in Waterloo, Iowa, infected more than 1,000 employees, 6 of whom died. We value our people and expect everyone on the team, especially our leaders, to operate with integrity and care in everything we do, according to Tyson CEO Dean Banks. The behavior exhibited by these individuals does not represent the Tyson's core value, which is why we took immediate action to get to the truth. Banks traveled to the Waterloo plant this week to talk about the actions with the employees. Tyson spokesman Gary Mickelson says the company won't release any detailed findings of the investigation or the names of those fired because of privacy. We can tell you that Mr. Holder and his team looked at the gaming allegations and found enough evidence for us to terminate those involved, Mickelson also said. Registration is now open for next year's American Farm Bureau Federation virtual annual convention, and Michael Clemens shares what attendees can expect.
Farmers and ranchers are encouraged to register for the American Farm Bureau virtual annual convention planned for January 10th through the 13th, 2021. Nikki Jones, Idea Ag Group marketing manager, says the virtual convention will include many of the same aspects as a traditional in-person event.
The Farm Bureau virtual convention theme this year is Stronger Together, which underscores the importance of unity and finding creative ways to engage and support our friends and neighbors in the industry. You can expect some fabulous keynote speakers, education sessions. We have some of the old favorites, YF&R and the Ag Innovation Challenge, the Foundation Night In.
Jones says the convention includes a robust lineup of keynote speakers.
Our keynote speakers at our general sessions include Mike Rowe, who will join the convention as our special guest for a fireside chat during our closing general session. We've got the Land O'Lakes President and CEO Beth Ford, who will join Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall. And we'll also be featuring an inspirational and entertaining keynote address from Navy SEAL Commander Rourke T. Denver.
This year, AFBF is waiving registration fees and inviting all of agriculture to attend.
For the first time ever, registration fees are being waived to give all Farm Bureau members and also anyone who's interested in ag the opportunity to experience one of agriculture's premier events from the comfort and safety of their home. Those interested in attending can find the registration link at annualconvention.fb.org. Register online, and then we will send you your registration link to join us on January 10th.
Again, register and learn more at annualconvention.fb.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
In other ag news here on your Friday, while not a big jump, oil prices have moved higher in the past week, thanks to encouraging results from the first rounds of COVID-19 vaccination in the United Kingdom and here in the United States. Patrick DeHaan of Gas Buddy noted that pushed oil prices this week to some of the highest levels we've seen during the pandemic. And he also notes that oil prices will continue to ride the coattails of the vaccine for the foreseeable future. Encouraging news will also push oil prices higher. Discouraging news will make them drop. But will the economy of the world return to normal, and will oil consumption increase to the years to come? DeHaan says it's just too early to tell.
We just have no way of realizing at this point how it's going to progress, how many doses of vaccine, any issues that could arise from that. 2021 will likely be the most difficult to accurately forecast when it comes to oil and gas prices because of the amount of factors that are completely unpredictable.
DeHaan also notes that OPEC agreed last week to increase production in an effort to get ahead of the demand curve as well as to discourage the United States from getting back in to the production business. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced on Tuesday of this week it will be leaving the monarch butterfly off the endangered species list. The service issued a warranted but precluded decision, which means the monarch will be considered a candidate species for now, according to Ryan Yates, American Farm Bureau Federation Public Policy Managing Director.
It places the monarch on a different list of a candidate species. So moving forward, the service will review the monarch annually to make a decision on whether it's warranted for seeing as a threatened species at that time or whether to keep it as a candidate species. Ultimately, I think what that does for stakeholders gives more opportunity for public-private partnerships to continue to support and enhance conservation efforts for the monarchs.
Yates says monarch butterflies migrate from Mexico to Canada each year through U.S. farm country.
That pathway crosses a great deal of land covering a large swath of the United States, and with that creates opportunities when we're looking to enhance conservation for the species. Ultimately, the species requires habitat as it progresses on its journey every year. Farmers and ranchers are in a unique position where they have the ability to invest in conservation measures through federal programs such as CRP to provide habitat benefits to bees and butterflies like the monarch.
Yates also says farmers and ranchers are already striving to be part of that solution.
We've been doing this for several years now, working with partners, not only in agriculture, but with the right-of-way groups and state DOTs. Many state agencies, wildlife agencies, are also developing conservation plans. And so, again, this really requires a pretty substantial public-private partnership that we're certainly very happy to be a part of and certainly are committed to continuing the conservation efforts for the monarch moving forward.
Again, that's AFBF's Public Policy Managing Director, Ryan Yates. And the monarch butterfly is the official insect of the state of Illinois. Finally, moving on to local ag news here for your Friday. A rash of burglaries of catalytic converters have been happening across the area, especially in the Litchfield area, also here in Montgomery and even Macoupin County. To speak more on the issue and where these incidents are happening, we'll join Litchfield Police Chief Kenny Riker, who explains these incidents aren't just happening on the farm, but also in the city limits of Litchfield.
Actually, we've seen that occur in both areas. It's been more recent within our jurisdiction and within our city limits, but their surrounding counties and our own have seen an increase in the thefts of catalytic converters, especially off larger vehicles, here in the last few months.
Chief Riker also explains that this rash of burglaries hasn't just been an isolated incident, but there's been many cases across the Litchfield area.
Within town here, we have several locations where larger vehicles are parked and stored for extended period of time. So those locations are where we're seeing this occur. Some are our business locations. Some are just where a larger vehicle has sat for a period of time where I think they may see that vehicle parked there. So if you could place those in a pretty easily viewed area, you certainly have security lights or a camera system to place them within the view of that, that ends up being really helpful. So, and in the rural area, same thing. I know a lot of people now have Ring cameras on their residence or on their buildings and those types of things, so make certain that those items are within view.
Junkyards are kind of known to be on the lookout for that type of stuff because burglaries of them do happen. But how are folks that do steal these catalytic converters, how are they turning them over to be able to get money?
Well, those items hold some intrinsic value as the metal is reusable, so they are finding ways to resell those either through the black market or, you know, open social media accounts and those types of things. So there is a market for them. They are kind of easy to unload, so they're something you should protect.
And two, you're also seeing an uptick in burglaries just in general with vehicles being the colder time of year. And, of course, those vehicles on a morning such as this with the snow, folks leave their vehicle running before work, and either they steal the vehicle or they have easy access into the vehicle.
What we've seen here lately is access to the vehicle, vehicles being left unlocked, valuable items being left within the vehicle, and we're seeing an increase in those type of thefts. So we would encourage our citizens and citizens of the surrounding area to make certain that they keep everything secure, don't leave any valuable items out in their vehicle, and try to protect themselves as much as they can. Most times theft is a moment of opportunity, so they'll look for the easiest target, and if they find some resistance with a locked vehicle, they'll just move on.
Absolutely, and here before we go, anything that I didn't ask you that you'd like to mention?
No, just that we're working diligently, as well as all the other law enforcement in the area, to try to both deter and detect these crimes. So we will be out looking for these individuals as well, and any help we can get from the public if they were to see someone around a vehicle that appears to be suspicious, to give us a call at the time of the occurrence, and that gives us an opportunity to try to engage with someone.
And again, that's Litchfield Police Chief Kenny Riker. And that concludes Ag News here on a Friday morning. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by an email at WSMI at WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Friday morning, December 18th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.